we're on our own. It's just regular people like us. It's moms and dads, and we don't have money behind us or anybody. It's really just us. We sell t-shirts so we can have picnics and stuff. Like, that's really, it's that, like, homemade. But it works.
It's grassroots, and I'm proud of that. Very proud. Yeah. This is grassroots.
It is.
So, and we're going to continue to win with the grassroots. Hi, you're listening to We Are Reopen Bucks. In this series, we sit down with some of the key players in the reopen movement and discuss their experiences navigating the pandemic. Today, I'm catching up with Megan Brock, a Northampton wife and mother who's been involved in countless aspects of the reopen movement and along the way has exemplified what it means to be truly grassroots. Welcome, Megan. Thanks for joining.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to start off with just expanding on this whole idea of grassroots, okay? And throughout COVID, we've had a lot of big players in like official positions, just as some examples like Sheriff Worrell, Dr. Damsker, people who have put a lot on the line, but they're few and far between when it comes to taking a lot of arrows in heat. And I was just thinking about this today ahead of coming on with you is, I don't think there's anybody in reopen or in the grassroots element of, you know, our area for COVID who has taken more arrows and more heat and stuff, and really abuse is what I'd call it, than you. There's been so much crazy stuff that once I was putting it all together, I'm like, oh my God, like you had the sign thwack thing.
Yeah.
You had the county commissioner Marseglia block your phone number from all county offices. Courier Times basically libeled you. Like the list kind of goes on and on and on with that's all you. So first of all, like, let's just address that. Cause I feel like I know you pretty well and you're a very kind person, mild mannered person. Like you're not crazy at all, but this is kind of what happens in the grassroots, right? Like you just get involved and suddenly all this stuff happens. So what do you make of all of that?
I don't know. I mean, it's been a wild 2 years. I've just been reflecting myself on a lot of things. And I remember right before COVID hit in February of 2020, I went to a local meeting about medical freedom, kind of trying to preserve medical freedom in Pennsylvania. And the girl who was leading the meeting suggested that we try to meet with our state representatives. So I had to go home and look at who mine were because I didn't actually, embarrassingly, I wasn't 100% sure. So I went on the website and looked, and it's just amazing to now, just over 2 years later, I know everyone in Bucks County government.
So much,
I feel like they know me. I know like a lot of Wolf's administration. So I don't know if it's just unlucky timing or what, but maybe God just knew I could handle these things, and that's why I've been put into those situations.
Well, it's having a pretty happy outcome, not just from everything you gain kind of fighting in the trenches. There's so many people who I'd point to in the same position, like you, Jamie Walker. But now at the end, like not only have there been these accomplishments and the whole story, but you're on the committee. You're on the local committee. You're suddenly like, you're talking about those people you went and looked up, like that's going to be you.
Yeah, well, I mean, not quite there yet. Not quite there. But yeah, I guess now I feel like after this 2 years of being involved, like a lot of people, I feel obligated to keep being involved. And I hope that a lot of people, as reopen is kind of closing down, find other avenues of involvement, because it is really important in November that we elect a governor who's not Josh Shapiro, irregardless of how people felt about the primary process or who their favorite candidate was. I know I don't want to have to keep fighting this reopen fight again and again and again. I think we're all tired of it. So hopefully by being involved in other ways, we can prevent going backwards and can actually gain ground.
And that's a great lead in to some of what you've done that I feel like this is going to make a huge difference. You're currently in litigation, right, with Montgomery County, which is where Josh Shapiro is from. He's probably involved in this to some extent.
I don't know. So it's funny. I actually saw Valor Koosh there was a opening of the South, this rail trail. And I went to the rail trail opening because it's 5 minutes from my house and the trail actually goes right by my house. So it's something that I'm interested in. And I actually met Valor Koosh and I said, Val, I said, hi, I'm Megan Brock. I said, you're suing me. And she looked shocked. And so I don't know, maybe she knows, maybe she doesn't know. I don't know. But the right to know request was asking for emails about Valor Koosh, Dr. Ruben at CHOP, Dr. Damsker. And it's a very large request that has over 130,000 pages of emails. And I have to believe that it'll be very eye-opening to see how the Monco Department of Health was run, and also how the influence of Dr. Ruben, who was, a lot of people don't know this, Dr. Ruben's at CHOP Policy Lab, and he was guiding not only the state Pennsylvania Department of Health, but also was advising the White House Corona, the National Task Force. So he was very involved politically at both the state and federal level and had a lot of influence in Montgomery County. So I think it's going to be interesting, assuming I ever actually get the 130,000 pages.
That's the trick.
We'll see.
Well, just the fact that they're hiding that much stuff, which, again, by the law, you're entitled to this. The Office of Open Records has ruled on appeal that you're entitled to this. Like, they literally are just trying to kind of run out the clock, so to speak, or maybe keep it going past election. But obviously, this is stuff you're entitled to, and they're suing you. So a huge government agency using taxpayer funds to sue you to try to keep this stuff hidden. I mean, that says everything. Like, regardless of what's in there, that's not good government, right? Kind of crazy.
At the very least, it totally undermines the whole right to know process. And that's why I was one of the main reasons I was pursuing it was when I filed the request, the agency, Montgomery County, said I could have the records, but it would require over $31,000 prepayment, which they're not allowed to do that. So they, I think, were just counting on me being like a dumb soccer mom who would just go away. I mean, that's what I kind of felt like. But they didn't know that I was friends with Diane Haring, who was helping me because I really didn't know anything. It was one of the very, it was actually one of the very first requests I ever wrote. And Diane said, hey, you need to appeal this. And I appealed it and I won. And then I kind of figured they were going to ghost me. I was kind of counting on that. But I also at that point knew Chad Schnee's name and was able to contact him.
Well, there's another fantastic lead in that I feel like a key thing you've done. And again, this goes to like the heart of the whole grassroots theme, doing these right to know requests to really try to figure out, okay, what happened? How did my government do this? Whether it's a school district or a county or the state health department, whatever, like what is government doing? I want to know. You, at some point you just became like, just like Diane, like you're running around with right to knows and putting things together like crazy and knowing the law and what you can do and can't do and all this stuff. And to see the level of absurdity that the agencies are going to in trying to like block you out and stuff and you have to like employ all these tactics is kind of crazy. But I did want to hit on, you know, this Monco thing was early on and you kind of becoming like a right to know expert, so to speak. Let's go through that story a little bit. My recollection is, maybe I'm wrong here, but very, very early on, weren't you the person who first put together the like Rebecca and Pete Malamis thing with the IU?
Yeah, so what happened was Jamie Walker was going through her right to knows with Central Bucks, and it was, I think it was like the winter of 2021. She had won a bunch of records from an appeal. And in one of those records she won, there was an email from Rebecca Malamis at the IU. And I believe Diane told her, hey, you know, you should submit a right to know request to the IU. So she did. And this was back in the early days where they were giving us a lot of records. And I remember I remember the date. It was is April 27th. Cause I only remember that because I have it written on the file. But it was like a 2,000 page request. And now at the time, oddly enough, or funny, humorously enough, I was actually working in assurance testing for a corporation doing like COVID testing because my background is actually in nursing. So what I was doing was kind of like you'd work for an hour and then you'd just sit there for 5 or 6 hours in case another employee needed to get a COVID test. So there was a lot of sitting around. So to occupy myself, I said, hey, look, you have 2,000 pages. Why don't you send them to me? I'll start reading them and we can see what we can piece together. And so Diane, Jamie, and I had our own kind of side chat. And we would just be like, okay, did you read this? And that's where we started to put together the IU story. And that kind of just one thing led to another, led to another, led to over 400 requests in 12 months and a lot of hours reading emails, requesting emails, filing appeals. And it's been quite a learning curve.
So the whole IU story is, I mean, there's no way we could fit this on to your episode. I know you are gearing up for a really big podcast you're going to put out, right? That covers a lot of this story, like basically this whole story within Bucks County, most of which like you, Jamie, Diane, you've put a lot of these pieces together. So super excited to hear that. But is there any way to put it into like an elevator pitch? What happened with the IU? Like, can you tease that? Because I feel like a lot of listeners, you know, we've had school board directors on. We've talked about what that's been like in terms of the experience of people. But not a lot of people yet know just how involved the IU was in everything that went down. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, so the IU was created in 1970 in Pennsylvania. And one of the reasons, if you go on their mission statement or read the law, was to actually enact policy in schools. So they kind of act as a liaison for new policy coming from the state. That's in, if you go and read their origins, that's there. So in addition to, they also do a lot of stuff with special education, IEPs, all that kind of stuff gets filtered through the IU. But then there's this other part of it where they're very influential with policy. So what happened is Dr. Damsker in June 15, 2020, put out guidance, and the IUs, there's 22 IUs in the state of Pennsylvania. My understanding is that intermediate units are something that's specific to Pennsylvania. And I say that because there's not like an international association or a national association of IUs. It's just a Pennsylvania association of IUs. So these units then kind of oversee districts and provide services, but they also provide a lot of communication. So during the height of COVID, when everything was new, Mark Hoffman, who's the director of the Bucks County IU, was routinely emailing superintendents, meeting and kind of virtually meeting with superintendents. I think sometimes they were having 13 superintendent calls twice a week and relaying information from policymakers and the Pennsylvania Department of Education to the superintendents, who then would use that information to make decisions about their schools. So when Dr. Damsker's guidance initially came out, there was a really positive response amongst IU directors. I think it was, you know, the SEPA counties work together. So you have Chester, Delco, Montgomery County, Bucks County. I feel like I'm missing another county. But they all work together. Directors work together. So they were all like, hey, this is great. Like, we love Dr. Damsker's guidance. His guidance came out, I think, a week before the Pennsylvania Department of Education put out their guidance. So I think educators were genuinely hungry for just some guidance, because nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew how they were going to reopen schools. And I think they were very grateful to have this roadmap. And then what happened was, you've talked about in other episodes, an educational lawyer almost immediately came out on his email list criticizing Dr. Damsker's guidance. And then about 10 days after the guidance was put out, in a webinar that was spread to superintendents across the state, I know that the IU was a part of this webinar or had watched it. Rebecca Malamas had someone take notes. They just basically ripped apart Dr. Damsker's guidance. And then, Rebecca Malamas kind of sent around an email to all the school districts saying, like, hey, you know, these are the things that this educational lawyer pointed out and reasons that maybe we shouldn't follow Dr. Damsker's guidance. And then over that summer, the IUs had these four county meetups where they would have they were facilitated by the IUs. Superintendents could go on the calls. And it's really sad because they had one in June where Dr. Damsker presented his guidance and everyone loved it. And then a month later, it was actually the educational lawyer was there representing, I mean, at least from the questions, it looked like representing the viewpoint of the PSEA. And that's by that time, a month later, it had all kind of fallen apart.
Now, why do you think that, like, when we talk about the Bucks IU specifically, and it would be the same way with all other IUs, but just trying to think about the Bucks IU specifically, why did they wind up taking the track where they pretty much were always, when they were putting out stuff to superintendents, to school districts, they were always about more COVID mitigation. Like, they were basically on Team Apocalypse, I would say. I think we know now from, like, talking to enough people and putting pictures together that they're not, like, Team Apocalypse people, but that's just the way they went. They never really, like, backed Dr. Damsker until way later in the fight, once, you know, you and Jamie are basically beating them into submission. Mm-hmm. So why is that? Why would they not go with their county's health director?
I think that if you look at the times when they kind of started advocating for something other than Dr. Damsker's guidance, some of these dates of when they had maybe meetings or certain emails perfectly correlate with dates when the PSEA was also putting out information and writing op-eds that were basically anti-Dr. Damsker. So Rebecca Malamas actually ran, I don't know if she still does, but for a while she ran a health consortium with Bill Cervantes, who was the head of the Mid-Atlantic Region PSEA for a point in time. So they're friends. I have emails of them being like, hey, we're going to grab lunch together. And, you know, from what I can understand, I think Rebecca Malamas is a pretty progressive in terms of her political ideology. I think a lot of educational leaders are very progressive in their political ideology. It almost seems like it's a requirement. Like, you're not allowed to be an educational leader unless you're very progressive. So I think what happened was it became very political. I mean, we all know COVID got politicized and school really got politicized because it didn't make any sense to not send kids to school. I mean,
you brought up the op-eds and Bill.
right.
Synovitis, he was one of those key players who wrote the whole, oh, 3 feet, this is going to kill people. Dr. Damsker is so reckless. Mm-hmm. And of course, like, that was total nonsense all the way. Just a lot of examples of like that. Very frustrating.
Right. Yeah. I think it's kind of groupthink and political ideologies and kind of everyone's going one way. And so if you're the person saying, hey, I think we shouldn't do this, you're probably not going to be popular when the whole kind of tidal like wave is all going in one direction. It's really hard to stop that.
So another one that I wanted to hit on is, weren't you, you were the person who like right to node Dr. Fraser's whole thing with the union, where he had openly said to union leaders, like, don't worry, my board's, we're going to control them or something like
that. Yes. And that's actually the school district I'm in is Council Rock. And I mean, I think it was pretty clear from, I mean, to me, it was from Dr. Fraser's leadership that he seemed to be pretty hardcore on Team Apocalypse and wasn't really in favor of opening schools or what I would say, not really in favor of students. So that was a whole, I know there's so many things. And I'm really happy that Council Rock has a new superintendent that everyone seems very happy about. Mm. So that's the good news, is that it sounds like there's someone new who's going to be a better fit.
Yeah. And you mentioned the educational lawyer, Jeff Sultanic. He's also now on the outs, finally. Well, Souderton School District, I think one other, are moving to get rid of him. So another part of the story is when you dig like this and fight from the grassroots again, you're a mom, right?
Right.
Like, you don't have dark money backing
you. I wish I did. I have a small business that's been horribly neglected because this has been so much time. I wish, I've been accused of dark money. I've been asked who's paying me. I'm like, man, if somebody wants to pay me, like, I'm here for it. Like, please. But yeah, there's definitely there's no dark money. There's no being
paid.
Well,
that takes us to the story you're gonna tell with it. Sounds like it'll be in podcast form. The transition there for me is that, like, you should get compensated and people need to hear. I'm glad we get to kind of tease this a little bit. The amount of work you've put in to really end to end tell this story, it's hard to describe. I saw a document that was like 80 pages of bullet pointed notes for this thing. So the research you're putting in on it is crazy. Just, I guess, tell everyone, like, where is this going? And how do you even begin to do something like that?
I don't know. I hope I can pull it off. I mean, it's trying to, for me, the story of what happened in Bucks County is really the story of one person telling the truth and going against the groupthink, and what can happen when normal everyday people work together then to support truth, really, and to support their community and support kids. Because that really, to me, when I think about what Reopen Bucks is, I think it's just normal people who alone could never really make that much of an impact on their own. But I think so many people came together and did what they could. And what everyone can do is different. Everyone has different giftings. Everyone has different situations. But I think there's so much power when people really come together. And it's a Ronald Reagan quote that I like mention a lot. But when people just do things for the good and not caring about who takes the credit. Which is maybe a different ideology than we hear in other places, right? When it's really about the common good. So to me, it's the story of how you had Dr. Damsker, who was advocating for kids to be in school. And you think about how trashed he was in the community and just all the heat. And he was really coming against not only adversaries in the community, but really, you know, local entities that were creating and forming national policy. He was coming against really like, I kind of think Dr. Damsker versus the world almost, because I can't think of many public health officials in Pennsylvania or the country who were really advocating for just a common sense approach. And here we had right in the Philadelphia region, you know, Dr. Rubin, who was on the White House Corona Task Force. He wasn't on the task force, but he was advising Dr. Birx. Don't want to miscommunicate that. He was advising Rachel Levin. You know, he was, if you look at the second wave of shutdowns in the summer of 2020 in July, from what I've read in Right to Know emails, it seems like Dr. Rubin was really behind that, was behind advocating for these new mitigations, and also at a federal level, because Dr. Birx was using his model from Child Policy Lab. And there's actually video and there's articles of him like going off about Texas and Florida. Like, he was trying to shut everyone down. And it's really funny.
Oh, he's the steel wall of Pittsburgh.
Yes,
right?
The steel wall of Pittsburgh. Yep. And that's something where he made a comment of saying that Rachel Levin telling her that Pennsylvania should become more like Australia and what they did in Australia and kind of create a series of checkpoints to create the steel wall so nobody could get COVID. Like, it gets crazy. And we see what happened in Australia. And I know that's not what I want for my family or my community. But
it's scary when you think about it, that people in positions of influence can possibly have such a mindset. It's very scary.
And also too, when I think something that I hope, if we can get the story out and get all the emails out, something that really needs to be evaluated is why are bureaucrats given this much power? This is someone who's not an elected official. Why does someone like that have that much influence and power? And another thing that's been really interesting as I've kind of dug into these Right to Know emails, you realize all these different organizations, like the American Academy of Pediatrics or the CDC or CHOP or Pennsylvania Department of Health. Like, I think about when people would try and say, oh, we can't do Doctors Dancers guidance because all these other professional organizations say no, but you start digging into who they are and they're all kind of the same people.
It's like
the people who are leading the American Pediatrics Organization are CHOP doctors, right? Or then you realize like CHOP doctors are Dr. Ruben at CHOP. He's basically helping to influence and write the Pennsylvania Department of Health school guidance. So it's like people will use all these different organizations and say, oh, this person, they're all agreeing, but you kind of peek behind the veil and a lot of them are all the same people, which is just kind of fascinating.
And like you said, with Dr. Damsker being the one to kind of stand against it, I feel like it's another thing that a lot of listeners to this episode right now don't know. It's really hard to explain until you've seen what you and Jamie have uncovered and found. A really good example of this to me that kind of shows like him standing in the way, just being a wall. Wasn't it December of 2020 when CHOP wanted to get testing in all schools?
Mm-hmm.
And if it was not for him, like you said, everything was on a track and people were just kind of following the machinery. If not for Dr. Damsker getting in the way, I think all of SCPA would have seen test to stay.
Yeah, no, Dr. Damsker very definitively shut that down. He basically said he didn't see the point in doing it because they were already utilizing the testing for teachers. And I believe for any kids who were symptomatic were able to get a test. I'm not sure exactly when that started, but I have a lot of respect for Dr. Damsker. I don't necessarily agree with him on every single thing, but for me, when I look at all this stuff that I've read and all that's happened, when I see someone really, put themselves out there in a way where they're putting themselves in a way where they may get harmed, whether that's their reputation, whether that's being like made fun of, or maybe even putting their job at risk. And I think Dr. Damsker really did that and really stuck to his guns. I mean, he never changed his June 2020 guidance. You think about how crazy it is. He said every kid needs to be in school and masks are optional. He really never changed that. So,
well, there's another element of your involvement is August 2021 hits. That's probably the craziest month. That's like the climax of the story, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And there's that August 23rd guidance, which we still don't have an answer officially from the powers that be on how that happened, but we pretty much know what happened.
Right.
How is it possible, again, you can live in a place where the government essentially does not like follow the rules and just makes up some nonsense and puts it out? I noticed he just released recent guidance May 12th, basically saying what he said in June 2020. Even better, he's like, look, just treat this like the flu. We're going back to normal, everybody. And that was sent to schools. It was signed by him. He signed the bottom of it.
Right.
That August guidance, he didn't sign.
I mean, he didn't write that. If you look at that August guidance, and sadly, I can say I've picked it apart, spent way too much time reading it. It's cut and pasted from guidance that was on the CDC's website and the PDE's website. And interestingly, there was an email from Senator Collette, who is a Monco state senator, but she has a tiny little rim of bucks, where there's a specific section that was copy and pasted, I believe, from the PDE's website that actually showed up in the guidance. But they had actually written to the Pennsylvania... let me just re-explain it so it makes sense. Senator Collette's chief of staff had emailed the Pennsylvania Department of Health, kind of, in my opinion, basically tattling on Dr. Damsker and asking what could be done to make him comply. And the section of the CDC's website's guidance that they had highlighted actually made it word for word into the Bucks County August 23rd guidance, which is just interesting because so much of it was kind of like copied and pasted. Like, it was, loosely, but that one part was very specifically there. So it's, I think anyone who just can read Dr. Damsker's previous guidances and read that guidance can just tell, like, that's the same person didn't write that. Yeah. It's beyond obvious.
Something that's been frustrating to me is you mentioned Senator Collette doing that. Senator, I hope I always say his name right. I don't know, Santerciero.
Yes,
I say that's how
I think that's right. Yeah,
like all the Democrats, yo, they went to work. Like, right. They go to bat, they do stuff for their side. And I massively respect that. You're now coming in as a committee woman for the GOP, so you're now part of the Republican club. Why is it that Republicans never had Dr. Damsker's back? Why did we? I mean, literally, I was thinking about this the other day. The best fighter in an elected position in Bucks County was a Democrat, Sheriff
right.
Worrell.
Absolutely. Like, by far. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. There was, when the August 23rd guidance was sent out, it actually got sent out to every local rep in Bucks County. So Democrat and Republican, they all received an email from the Department of Health saying, hey, you know, this is a letter from Allison Beam asking the commissioners to, you know, beat Damsker's guidance into submission and comply with our guidance. And nobody did anything. And I don't know the answer to that. I find it very disheartening. I know that the answer people like to say is, oh, you know, well, we couldn't do anything. And I think my answer to that is, I feel like I did more as a private citizen who's not an elected official than any of you did to get our kids back in school. So if, you know, I could do that, if you as a private citizen can do that, why can't our elected officials do anything? Yeah. It's a good question.
It's so easy to dismiss. I mean, it goes to the point of the grassroots thing. We did what we did in Bucks with the grassroots and very, very little else. Mm-hmm. And okay, if you don't think you can do anything, why were the Democrats doing it?
Right.
Like, Santa Sierra wrote a letter chiding Damsker for allowing toddlers to play together.
Right.
That's insanity.
Right.
But they just do it. They just take their shot. So you guys, like, do something. Just jump in and take your
right.
shot.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the other thing with the August 23rd story is that, I mean, maybe not everyone's familiar with the disease law of 1955, where it specifically states the local health department has authority over mitigation efforts in schools. So when the Pennsylvania Department of Health wrote a letter to the county commissioners, not to Dr. Damsker, and asked them to change his guidance, in my opinion, I'm not a lawyer, but in my opinion, that qualifies as asking them to supervise the Bucks Department of Health. And I think what people need to stop and just think about it in terms of, they asked three people, the commissioners, none of whom have any medical credentials, right? They don't have any reason to be given control of the health department. And yet the Pennsylvania Health Department asked them to oversee and change the guidance that Dr. Damsker, who is a medical professional, who has legitimate qualifications for his role, you know, they asked people who aren't even medically licensed to make changes that would affect 80,000 students. They asked them to not listen to the health director during a pandemic.
Crazy.
And I think if people just stop and think about that, like, I think that's crazy.
It's crazy.
That's not a good precedent. Do we want people who are not medical professionals to be given authority over our local health department? I don't really think that makes any sense. And I don't really think it's legal.
Well, as if it's not clown world enough, the person who was sending that request and initiating that whole crazy takedown
is a lawyer
who is no longer in that position,
right.
Had to resign,
right.
Presumptively in shame because everything was illegal. The mask
right.
mandate was illegal. What she did here in Bucks was illegal.
Right. Well, crazy. She was actually, I believe she was on, was she maybe Wolf's chief of staff before that? So she was just a politician. I mean, she wasn't.
Yeah, they just swapped her. Once she did her job, they swapped her for the next one.
And from what I've read with the emails, I think Wendy Braun and Sharon Watkins, I believe, is an epidemiologist. They seem to be the two women who actually really kind of run the health department. I think the Secretary of Health, after Levin left, really became just more of a figurehead, kind of like a political figurehead who wasn't really involved in, I don't know. I can't say they weren't involved in decision making, but if you're not a qualified medical professional, you can't really be making medical decisions.
Yeah.
So.
No, I want to throw you some massive credit for something. This is a total change of topic, just
okay.
right out of left field. But you are an incredible photographer.
Oh, thank you.
So you've done just for the movement, you did a bunch for when we did the sports league, you took pictures for everybody. You have your business, right? Is Meg Brock Photography?
Yes, correct. Yep.
How did this all affect your business?
I mean, I think in the beginning, as far as speaking out, you always kind of worry you're going to get targeted or that people aren't going to want to hire you if they know you and they see that you're speaking out about these things. And I think that happened a bit. I mean, everything got shut down. A lot of my business's weddings and events. So obviously COVID had a massive impact on that. I mean, fortunately, my background was I was a pediatric ICU nurse before I was a photographer, and I've always maintained my license. So when everything like went down in March, I immediately went and got CPR certified because I thought, hey, you know, what if it gets crazy? Like, what if they just need nurses? And like, I couldn't work in the ICU, but I could take care of someone in like a med-surg unit. You know, I can remember what I'm doing. So I actually did like a couple like testing job, like kind of what I called stupid nurse, not real nursing, but you needed a nursing license. So I did kind of some of that, kind of one, every, all the events were shut down. But the biggest thing is that it's just all doing all the right to know stuff has been a major time suck. So obviously there are a lot of things I could be doing for my business in terms of marketing and everything else that I just has gotten a little neglected. But hopefully now that we're moving on, I can kind of put some energy back into that.
Yeah, that's why I go back to, I feel like, I mean, I know you're doing it just because you're one of these badass fighters, but this deserves some compensation. Mm-hmm. Like really there should be a book that comes out of this or something, because the sheer volume of what you've put together, even having something like Reopen Bucks, and we go back and try to look through all the posts and stuff, there's really, it's incredibly hard to put that all together because there was so much volume of what happened.
Yeah.
And I feel like the story here, it really truly is special. Like I can't tell people enough, you know, once you have this content created, people got to pay attention because what happened in Bucks was different. Dr. Damsker was different. Our politics was different. I just think it's just really representative of what was happening in the country.
I absolutely do. And I think people might not like remember or realize too that Bucks County is a swing county in a swing state, right? And it's always, I've lived in Bucks County my entire life. So I've always really loved Bucks County. I thought it was a great place up until like 2 years ago when everything went crazy. But growing up, I remember it being quite conservative. And going back and doing some of this research, you know, Diane Marsegula became a county commissioner in 2008. And that was the same year Dr. Damsker actually became the county health director, which is kind of like, there's just some irony to that, how they worked together for so long. And I think pre-COVID, I mean, my understanding of the health department is they checked on restaurants, right? They like might've done like some, I don't know, disease clinics or, the, you know, their job, they weren't really in the spotlight. Like the local public health director wasn't a public figure that people knew about. And then in 2019 is when, for the first time, I think in decades, the Democrats won the majority commissioners. So in early January 2020, Diane Marsegula and Bob Harvey were sworn in as the majority commissioners. I'm sure that's something that Diane Marsegula had been thinking about for, what, 12 years at that point? I'm sure they were very excited. And then it was like, bam, COVID hits. And it's really interesting. I went back and looked at all the Facebook posts from like early 2020 and just seeing the progression even within the commissioners, like it's actually kind of sad. You see it kind of going from this atmosphere where people were working together and seemed genuinely friendly and genuinely excited to kind of just further digressing into complete polarization, into vilifying people who maybe used to be friends. And I think that's really what's sad about what's in all of this, that's really what's happened.
When I look back on August, I feel like they had Damsker's back, everything was fine. And then finally in August, the political situation cracked. They just couldn't handle the political pressure of being Democrats who were allowing this.
And what happened was that there's something called ELC funding, an ELC grant. And it was basically funding for testing and I believe vaccination initiatives that came from the CDC. So if I remember correctly, Pennsylvania received more than $320 million of this funding. And Sharon Watkins, who I mentioned earlier, was kind of in charge of this team that was working with the CDC to roll out these testing initiatives. And so the testing initiative, you think about COVID testing, you're only going to buy into that if you have to. So like the idea was that kids, if they were exposed, okay, look, you don't have to miss 10 days of school. You can just go get a COVID test and then you can come back. But if you eliminate the need for quarantine, you really eliminate the need for the testing program. And when Dr. Damsker came out with that guidance on August 15th, what that did is it undermined the entire motivation for the testing and vaccine initiative that they rolled out on August 16th, the day after his guidance. And this was something they've been working on all summer, well-funded. Allison Beam got an email from someone from the Secretary of Education saying, wow, you did such a great job. I believe that was the press conference that Mark Hoffman at the IU was actually at the press conference announcing that, because he was the president, I believe, of the Pennsylvania Association of IU. So I really think that August 15th guidance was an act of heroism from Dr. Damsker, because from what I've read, he probably knew it was coming and he did it anyway. You know, he knew the train was coming and he still...
I've wondered that. I've felt at several points, like even with this May 12th stuff. So he put out that May 12th, literally the next week, you have a whole bunch of districts in Monco and all over the place. They're like, oh, masks are required. We're going to go back to doing this. I feel like he has a pulse on stuff and is trying, a lot of what he does is just trying to get ahead of the game.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, I think I have emails even from like August 10th, August 11th, where they were talking about they were meeting to put out this new guidance. So, you know, whenever you see something publicly announced, there's the behind the scenes, it's been worked on probably for weeks beforehand. So when the public announcement comes, people who are involved in any way would have known beforehand. So I think that August 15th guidance was quite brave, even though, you know, I know that... You know, what would happen, it was just quite an emotional time, but for everyone, but it was, I think, a last act of trying to kind of lay on the sword and keep testing out of schools.
Yeah. It totally makes me just cringe at my own, because as soon as he fell to like the hospital executives and then later would be overruled by the commissioners in the state and everything. And I feel like there was some abandonment there and throwing him under the bus, because at the time, like the right to know stuff and all the work that you've done to put that picture together, it takes months to put that back together. So at the time, didn't have the full picture and kind of abandoned him too quickly. But it definitely is interesting to see after the fact, like how much he was up against. You alluded to it at the beginning fantastically. He was like one man fighting against a whole system.
Yeah. Which I know it sounds like hyperbolic, but I do actually feel like in some ways it was, when you have the doctor who's advising Dr. Birx. And if anyone's read any of Scott Atlas's book, he really talks about how Dr. Birx was really the one who was running the show, that Dr. Fauci was kind of like a talking head, but Dr. Birx was making all these decisions. So the fact that, you know, someone locally was advising Dr. Birx is a big deal. And then you think about everything that transpired. I think when the initial kind of hospital, whatever happened on that on August 17th happened, I think because I had read so many emails, I knew there must be something really major happening behind the scenes, because I really believed that Dr. Damsker wasn't someone who would just kind of just falter easily, because he'd already been through so many things. And that's why I went on the 18th to the commissioners meeting and got to know my county commissioners. And, you know, Diane Marseglia ran out of the room. And that was kind of the start of this new chapter of Jamie and I going to the commissioners meeting and trying to battle out to see what actually happened in our schools. But it's a crazy story.
It is. Well, I can't wait to hear it, the way you're going to tell it. And
I hope I pull it off. I don't know. It's a little overwhelming, to be honest. I think about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you tell the important parts of the story and decide the things that you need to, not getting lost in the details so people don't get bored. Yeah. So,
I mean, I can relate to that. It's you want to get it right because it's important.
Right.
And it's such a good story what happened in Bucks, I feel like.
And I think too, I mean, given the current political scape of Pennsylvania, I really believe like it's really fascinating when you look at what happened in Monco versus what happened in Bucks. And they're two counties separated by County Line Road, and yet two very different experiences. And I really feel like in November, we're going to kind of be choosing which road do we want to go down as a state. Do we want to go down a road where a freedom and liberty, or a road of like lockdown and authoritarianism? So I hope people understand that and understand the importance of voting in November, even though I know there's a lot of people who feel disenfranchised or feel so many things. And I'm not going to lie, like I feel a lot of those things too. And I understand that point of view, but we just can't, we can't give up at this point. You know, it's really important that people vote and stay involved to encourage their friends and family to vote.
Yeah. It's hard to overstate or make it hyperbole. You always say, oh, this is like the biggest election of our lives or whatever. But I mean, look at what Wolf did. It's hard to argue that this is not, especially when it's Mastriano.
Right.
Who's, you know, in Reopen Bucks, he was there very early on. Like, yeah, we literally are choosing very two divergent paths forward for our state.
It makes me really uncomfortable to think about. I don't like thinking about it.
I remember thinking, like, I mean, not too long ago, you know, if Shapiro wins, like, we got to move. I mean, look, there's all these states that are free and they're the normal American life.
Right.
You can't, how long can it last? And I want to, I hate saying that because I feel like people should stay and fight. You have to, like, this is our home. But my goodness, it's a big
tough
deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough when you have your kids and you realize they have one childhood, and how do you want them to spend their childhood? I mean, I think that's what's been so amazing about Reopen Bucks, and I'm thankful for you and Kiri and all you've done, because even though this was all a lot and it was really hard, it was amazing to see people come together. I feel like my kids, even in the summer of 2020, still had a normal normal child, normalish, like 90, normal-ish. I would say like 90, 95% normal, right? And I'm really thankful for that, that they didn't have 2 years of losing their social skills, or we made memories and we did things and we had birthday parties, and you know, it wasn't like this giant interruption for them. And that's something I'm always, yeah, be always thankful, because that's really, I think, what motivated me, and I think motivated the two of you and so many other people, was just trying to keep things as normal as we could for our kids.
We didn't even get a chance to talk about it, but you had done a lot of that. You put on like arts classes, right?
Yeah, we did the craft days.
Yeah.
The kind of speaky, easy craft days.
Yeah,
like, you
back
know,
when it was like highly illegal.
It was, yeah, the summer of, winter of 2020. That's just, again, I think that the craft days were such an awesome example of how great Reopen Bucks was. You know, my daughter loves to do crafts, and I knew people were looking for things to do. And so I think I contacted Vanessa Smith, who's a Reopen Bucks member, because she goes to Corkery Church. And I said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. Do you think we could use the church? And she emailed the pastor, and he said, sure, which were, to me, as someone who's been in church my whole life, I was really amazed by that, because there are so many churches where if you want to use the building, it's like you have to like give them like your life story. You have to like sign 5 forms. And he was so great. It really just spoke to me about how helpful and supportive they were to the community, that they just, he was just like, yeah, use it, you know? And then Vanessa would just get the key and we go set everything up. And, you know, we had 40 or 50 girls there, for people there, girls and their moms, just kind of having a nice time. And it was, those were a lot of fun.
Yeah. So definitely my favorite part to think back on is all the little stories that everybody brings. Like you said, it's whatever you bring to the table. Maybe it's a lot, maybe it's a little, but you put it all together and it's very nostalgic. It's hard not to get nostalgic thinking back to, even though it was like really a bad time and the world sucked. We were doing the best we can, but like, I'm thankful. I'm very thankful for people like you, everyone else.
Well, we all made good connections too. I think made a lot of friends, and through this group, and real, and like people, you know, not just on Facebook. Like, I think that's the great thing about Reopen Bucks, is that it wasn't just a Facebook group where people just sat and moaned. It was like a group where there was a lot of action. And I think that's where it became powerful, was when people made those connections off the internet and in real life, and were going to school board meetings or going to events or going to, you know, whatever they were going to. And I think that's the real powerful, that's the power of the movement, is really, in my mind, is connections, and how so many people connected, and it's just awesome.
There's maybe a great place to end it with one more question is, you know, groups come into a close here pretty quickly. Moving forward, there are still all of these, it's hard to, like, I never had social media before this. So literally like every connection or every friend I have is kind of because of this. But you know, we have places to go, businesses we love, totally different things that people do because of the whole experience. Where do you see that going? I mean, I'm curious to hear specifically from you, because you decided, okay, I'm going to run for a committee. You know, I'm going to step up and be more and more involved. I presume, like, just because the group shuts down, Megan Brock is not stopping anything you're doing. You're going to keep hounding the commissioners, putting in right to knows, like you're still fighting on the ground. So what do you think that transition looks like for everybody?
Gosh, I don't know. I think I'm just taking it one day at a time, right? Like right now, I just want to finish up this podcast. I want to take a break from like you're saying you guys need to take a break this summer. I kind of just want to take a break from like doing these right to know requests. I mean, I think the big, for me, like kind of the big mile marker is November of just trying to do whatever I can as a person, and hopefully with the community, to try and have not elect Josh Shapiro as our governor. And I guess we'll just take it from there, right? One day at a time. I have no idea where it's going to lead, but I mean, the way the world is, I don't know. I've never been very good at making like these long-term plans. It's just not how my brain works, but especially with the way the world is, I really just want to be able to go to the gym like 3 or 4 days a week, because all of this stuff has all been like taking up so much of my time. I'm like, I just want to go to the gym. If I can go to the gym and just like spend some time with my kids, like, and you know, maybe put a little time into my business, I'll be happy. That's really the goal. I think that's for most of us who are involved in this. We really just want to live our normal lives. I think the danger in that though is, I mean, this is just like kind of, you know, generalizing, but I think people who tend to be more conservative really kind of just want to be left alone, right? So our inclination, at least for me, is not to be involved. Like before this, I was never involved in anything. Right, so I just was always kind of like, oh gosh, if I mean, sounds terrible. I'm like, if I get involved, I'm going to have to deal with people. And I just don't need to be dealing with people. Like I just want to deal with my own life, you know? So, and in some ways, I think for myself, I feel like I've grown a lot as a person, and I've seen areas that I need to grow in and things that I need to work on. And that's been healthy, because you put yourself in situations where you become uncomfortable And that's the only way you really grow as a person. So hopefully, you know, all the people who've been involved feel that way, that we've all grown as people and we'll continue that growth by continuing to put ourselves in situations that maybe make us feel a little uncomfortable, but we're willing to do it. We're willing to sacrifice some of our time because our greater goal, at least for me, is to preserve our way of life for my children and potential grandchildren. Like, I would love for them to know the freedoms that, you know, that we've enjoyed. I'd love for them to be able to give their public comment at a commissioner's meeting and not have the commissioners block their phone number, you know, or I don't think they should be hit it over the head if they, you know, are at a public gathering. Like, there's all these little things that's really the motivation for all of it. Is I don't think people realize that there, what a gift we have in this country, that if you've never really traveled, I mean, even if people have, but there are so many places in the world where the world's just not safe. Like, I took my son to his first Phillies game on Sunday and I was like crying on the way home because I thought, man, as crazy as the world is, I can still take my son who's 8 and loves baseball and we can sit there for 6 hours and watch the Phillies make a lot of mistakes, but pull it off and just have a good time being together. And I'm not worried about like our safety. I'm not worried about, you know, I'm not going home to poverty, like all of these things that we take for granted and just our way of life. And I just thought about it. I said, this is really what we're really fighting for, is the ability to have these normal everyday experiences that a lot of people in the world don't have.
Man, thank you for being a fighter in all of it. I'm really, really glad you've been a part of this story and glad to have you on. Now, where can folks go to find out more about Meg Brock Photography?
Oh, my website's just megbrock.com. So if you're having, yeah, it's easy. Yeah. So somehow I got that domain. So I better not let it lapse, right? Yeah. Megbrock.com. And I do families, businesses, portraits. So lots of different things.
And then how about this podcast coming up? Is there a place to pitch people? Well, yes. We're definitely going to let anyone know. We'll like blast it out to our email list, even if the group is closed.
Yes, I have a domain that I actually bought in January. And it's sad because it's at the end of May and I thought it would be done by now, but I'm not even, don't even have it completed. But the domain is AmericanGrassrootsPodcast.com. So I'm just going to have kind of like a temporary website up where you can, if you want to know when it's available to be downloaded, you can kind of sign up and give me your email and I can let you know.
Awesome. Cool. Well, again, thanks so much, Megan. Thanks for being a part of Reopen Box.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. On. Thanks for all you and Kiri have done. I know it's a lot when you're raising 4 kids. And when you talk about August of 2021, I mean, to me, the biggest part of that story is Kiri was about to have a baby. Yeah. And she, I remember she had the baby and you're like on the Dom show. It's just like thinking, how are they doing all of this? Like, they just had their 4th baby. So.
Man, it was a wild time. And now, I mean, again, now that baby is 9 months old. Oh, it's like, gosh, oh my gosh, so this story. Too.
Yeah. So thank you for all you guys have done.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Good stuff. Thanks, Megan.
All right. Thanks.